Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig, and I just wanted to give you an update. Over the last 9 months, in large part because of your listener support, we've managed to build this show into one of the top guitar and human interest podcasts online. As a result, we now have openings for a select group of businesses to advertise on and sponsor this show. And I thought you, as a listener, would be in the best position to make recommendations to business owner friends of yours who might benefit from advertising here on the Everyone Loves Guitar Show. So if you know a business owner who might profit from advertising on this show, have them connect with me by going to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertising. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertising. I'd love to have a brief conversation with them to see how we might be able to help. Thanks for your help. And now let's get on with the show.
Do this.
Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber with Everyone Loves Guitar. And I'm here with actually one of my personal favorite guitarists. We're with Sean Chambers. He's a great blues player out of here in Florida. And I've actually seen Sean live probably four or five times. We got to meet last time he was coming through Tampa, and I'm really happy to have him on the show. Excellent player, super cool guy, very nice, real successful. He's got six albums now, and he's getting ready to put his seventh in the next couple of months. And let me tell you about him. I first came across Sean, I saw him open down here. Man, did you ever, maybe for Buddy Guy or somebody, it was a long time ago, so it doesn't matter.
But the last time I played with Buddy, I think, was back in, it was quite a while, at the Tampa Bay Blues Festival in 2004, actually.
That might have actually been it. But when I saw you, I said, man, this guy's a really good blues guitarist. And the thing I liked about you is you could just tell, like, you were just giving everything on stage, man. You know, you could tell it was just the effort was 110%. So
thank you. That's a compliment. I appreciate that. We try to, go out there and give it hell, you know.
You sure do, man. Like I said, I've seen you three or four times since, and every time's the same. Sean was actually born here in Florida. He started his blues career back in 98 when he was touring with actually the legendary Hubert Sumlin as his guitarist and band leader until 2003. And during Sean's tenure with Hubert, Britain's Own Guitarist magazine named him one of the top 50 blues guitarists of the last century. In 2009, this is the first album, Sean Chambers' album I got. He went into the studio to record 10 Till Midnight. If you want to start somewhere with Sean, that's a great record. When that was released in October 2009, it got rave reviews and was also on the Living Blues chart for the first 3 months after its release. It got steady airplay in 45 states around the U.S. as well as many markets overseas. The title cut was featured on the House of Blues Radio Hour as a blues breaker, and the title cut is really, really good. And the album also generated significant airplay on Sirius XM Radio on the Blues Channel as well as I Pick to Click. Me personally, like I said, I bought that album when it came out. It's got great playing on it, and also In the Wintertime is probably one of my favorite songs on there. It's 6 minutes of just blistering, blues where Sean's really ripping it up. Sorry, my cat is not leaving me alone. Yeah, she's like 14, man. I have to be gentle with her. 15, excuse me. He released Live from Long Island Blues Warehouse in 2011, and that album appeared on B.B. King's Bluesville XM Sirius Blues charts as a pick to click for 6 weeks in a row, as well as 15 weeks on the RMR Weekly Blues Roots charts and 11 weeks on the House of Blues radio charts. The album was voted Best Live Blues Album of 2011 by Canada's Blues Underground Network, and it was ranked as one of the top three live CDs in Germany. In addition, it was nominated for a Jimmy Award for Best Live Blues Album of 2011, and Guitar Player magazine did a full-page story on Sean in February 2012. The same month, Vintage Guitar magazine ran a two-page story as well, a feature. In October 15th, 2013, Sean released the Rockhouse Sessions on Blue Heat Records. The album received great reviews and was also nominated for a Blues Blast Music Award in 2014 and iBest Blues Rock Album of the Year. In March of 2017, Sean released his sixth album, which is called Trouble and Whiskey, and that was on American Showplace Music Label. We'll talk about that today. Trouble and Whiskey hit number 11 on Billboard, reached number 7 on the Living Blues charts during the first week of its release, and he was nominated for a Blues Blast Music Award for the Best Blues Rock Album of the Year. The album is produced by Ben Elliott, who's recorded classic artists such as Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Billy Gibbons, and Les Paul, so he's got a great team behind him. Sean currently resides in Southwest Florida with his wife Karen, who handles all his merch sales while on tours. Sean is proudly endorsed by GHS Strings, Voodoo Amps, Eminence Speakers, DiMarzio Pickups, Celestial Effects, and Bullet Guitar Table. Sean, I'm so happy you came on the show today. We've been trying to set this up for...
Yeah, we've been missing each other a few times, but man, I'm really glad we're able to get it, you know, that I'm able to, you know, on your show, and thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure. And honestly, I'm going to tell people this, he's one of the nicest guys around, man. You know, just a sweet guy and a great player, so I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it.
How'd you get the gig with Hubert Sumlin, and what were you doing before that?
Man, that was in 1998, and I had a manager who's also still one of my best friends. His name's Steve Einzig. He was out of New York City. And he actually put together a label called Vestige Records, which my first album, Strong Temptation, was on. And I did Strong Temptation back in 98, and Steve started managing Hubert Sumlin shortly after that. He did a little bit of managing, some booking and stuff like that, as well as running the label. And Hubert had a show in Memphis in October of 1998 at Memphis in May, which is a big, it was called Bluesstock, which was in Memphis. And, he had a show at, the Black Diamond, which is right next to BB King's. It's closed within the last few years. But anyway, Steve called me and said, man, I'm booking Hubert and I'm managing him now, and he needs a band for this gig in Memphis. How would you like to back him up, you and your band? So that was a no-brainer. And I said, you know, absolutely, I'd, you know, be honored. So he said, well, just, you know, Hubert said to just, you know, learn all the Wolf material, learn some of his material, and you guys can actually make the set list up and just learn all the hits. And so we woodshedded for about 2.5 months, came up with, you know, a really good couple sets, you know. And we did the show with Hubert, and it went really good. And Hubert said, man, I want you guys to be my group that night after we did the show.
That was so cool.
Yeah, because, you know, he's always been a sideman. He's one of the most legendary sidemen ever. He played with Howlin' Wolf for 25 years and Muddy Waters. And, you know, everybody idolized him, including Clapton and, you know, Keith Richards and all those guys loved Hubert. But he never had his own band, you know. So he wanted us to be his group. And he took us all around the world. And I toured with him for a little over 4 years.
That's fantastic. Now, he didn't play with a pick, if I remember correctly, right?
He did not, no. That's a funny story, too, because Wolf didn't like using a pick, and he didn't want Hubert to use a pick. So, you know, and Hubert even told me a couple times he fired him. Wolf said, man, when you learn to play without a pick, come call me. So finally, they had kind of a father-son relationship, according to Hubert. There was about a 20-year age difference. And so, yeah, Wolf convinced him to quit using a pick, and Hubert said he's glad he did. It's the best thing he ever did, because it's just that kind of became his sound and his style.
Very cool, man. I would imagine that was a great education for you to tour with him and going all over the world. What were some of the bigger lessons that you learned from him, either, you know, musically, playing-wise, performing-wise, life-wise?
Well, obviously, I learned a lot about the guitar and about blues, you know. But I also, man, Hubert was a really, really down to earth, probably the nicest person I've ever met. So, you know, you're up there with this legend, but at the same time, he's just such a sweetheart of a person, such a, you know, gentle, great soul. And he taught me that, you know, just go up there and have fun. You know, the first night I met him, I was really nervous, and my manager took me to the Peabody Hotel in Memphis to meet him before our show there, first time, and I was so freaking nervous. And I said, oh, Mr. Sumlin, nice to meet you. And I said, man, here's the set list we came up with. I wanted him to look at the set list and okay and anything we need. He goes, man, partner, he goes, all I want you to do tonight is one thing. I said, what's that? He goes, just let your hair down and let's have some fun.
Oh, you know, that's so cool.
He goes, don't worry about making a mistake. If you make a mistake, he goes, I make mistakes every night. He goes, let's just go up there and have a good time. And he had just had a way of putting you at ease.
Very cool.
So I think, you know, one of the things I learned from him is, man, you know, how to stay humble. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, even if there's 10 people at the show or there's 1,000, you still got to give them your all because, you know, those people have been working all week long and they're paying the $15 or $20 or $30 ticket to get in. So that's their time when they forget about everything. And, you know, it's up to you to put on a good show. And he always did that. And he kind of relayed that to me. And that's a couple of the things that I, when I look back, that I definitely learned from him that I still use.
Well, I mean, just the other day when you were telling me, like, you know, you doing something for your guys, I thought that was real, you know, your band members. And I was like, wow, that was really cool of you. So, I mean, I could see that, you know, you internalize that. That's how you live your life, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate that.
How come that gig ended?
The gig ended because Steve and Hubert, it's a really super long story, but they stopped working together.
Oh.
And Hubert started dating this lady named Tony, and she started managing him.
Oh.
And then she just had different ideas of, you know, how things should go and how things should be. And we just didn't see eye to eye. And, you know, once Steve and Hubert parted ways, kind of, you know, because of Tony, I was kind of, you know, still with Steve, and it just kind of, the whole thing just kind of ended. But me and Hubert were always very close, though.
So it's like the Yoko thing?
Kind of, yeah. times 10. Yeah.
What did you do between 03 and 09 when you released 10 Till Midnight?
Between 03 and 09, I did my second album in 2004. It's called Humble Spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And I recorded that in Sarasota, Florida. Bud Snyder, who worked with the Allman Brothers for about 25 years as their front of house engineer.
Wow.
He has a studio down here in Sarasota, still does, and has a great ear. He's one of the best guys, you know, behind the board. And so, you know, I did my second album in 2004. I believe it was released in 2005. And so we toured around that and behind that for a couple years. And then it was about 4 years till I did my next album, 10 Till Midnight.
Is that where you are now, Sarasota?
No, my wife and I live in Fort Myers, actually.
Where is that, north of Sarasota or south?
It's south.
So between like Naples and Sarasota?
Exactly. Yeah, oh, okay. Fort Myers is between, kind of between like Punta Gorda and Naples.
Gotcha.
And Sarasota is probably about an hour and 10 minutes or so north.
So you're like, so Sarasota is like literally the middle between like you and me, basically.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's a good middle point, yeah.
I never ask this question because it's like kind of cheesy and like I'm sure everybody else asks it.
What's that?
But I really think 10 Till Midnight was a cool album name. I was just curious where the, you know, I know that was a Charles Bronson movie back in the 80s. I was curious if that was an influence on it or.
Yeah. You know, that's funny because I never knew that was a Charles. Of course, I was a teenager back in the 80s and. You know, yeah,
I'll sure okay, Sean.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like it had nothing to do with the Charles Bronson movie, and it wasn't until after I released the album that a couple people asked me that. That's actually, you know, that title, I was working on a couple different songs, and I had that kind of riff. Sometimes, you know, you can write a song based around a riff you're doing, or you could write a song based around a melody or a, you know, and I, you know, or maybe a vocal line. Mm. But what I was doing was kind of writing. And if I came up with a cool name that I thought, you know, would be cool, I would write it down, something kind of catchy. So 10 Till Midnight, I kind of jotted that down as I was writing some words down. And I thought, man, that's a cool, actual kind of cool name for a song, maybe even the album. So then at that point I said, you know, I think the name of the album is going to be 10 Till Midnight, but I hadn't written the song yet.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so, you know, that was actually one of the last songs I finished for that album, and it actually became the title cut. So, yeah, that's kind of how that one got started.
Thanks, man. I just think that's just like a very cool, badass name, 10 Till Midnight. I don't know. Cool. I always liked it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for putting it out. What prompted you to start releasing your own albums in the first place? Because, I mean, that is a really big undertaking. Leading a band, you know, choosing to – I guess the better question is what prompted you to – choose to be a band leader instead of a sideman, because that's a big undertaking. It's a lot of responsibility. I realize it's probably liberating in some ways as well, but, and then you've released now, you know, six albums, got another one right around the corner. What prompted you to go that way instead of sideman or whatever?
Man, back when I was a kid and I was playing guitar, I had a good friend named Justin, and we played guitar together, kind of had an acoustic duo thing ever since fifth grade. We kind of grew up playing guitar together. And we liked all the rock and roll back during the day. You know, I used to listen to all the popular rock and roll and Southern rock, too, being from Florida. And one day when I was about 14 or 15, a buddy of mine picked me up. He just got his driver's license. He was a couple years older. And he came and picked me up in his Pinto.
I remember those Ford Pintos, yeah.
Yeah. And he picked me up and he put in a cassette tape of Jimi Hendrix. And the first song that came on was Red House. And I was learning to play guitar at the time, but I was basically doing power chords and, you know, playing along with, you know, my favorite bands and stuff like that on my tape deck. And when I heard Hendrix do Red House, that's the first time the hair on my arm stood up and I got chill bumps. And I said, who is this? What kind of music is this? This is what I want to do. I just found what I want to do on guitar. So I was kind of searching, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, I started figuring out a lot of Hendrix's influences, kind of, you know, his blues influences, like, you know, Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and a lot of the guys he was influenced by. And that just that style of guitar and the way he fronted his band and sang with that power trio, you know, then I started really getting into that sound. And a couple years later, I discovered Stevie Ray Vaughan. And then I found Billy Gibbons and Albert Collins. And then I really started delving into a lot of the blues artists, getting really into the blues. And all the guys I idolized and listened to, they all fronted their own bands. You know, Johnny Winter, Stevie Ray, Hendrix, Albert Collins, B.B. King, Albert King, Freddie King, all the Kings, of course. And I just realized at a young age, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play that guitar. I wanted to play blues, but I never considered myself a singer. So it was several years after I started playing that I realized if I'm really going to do what moves me and inspires me, I'm going to have to start singing, you know, if I want to front my own band.
Hmm.
So, that whole train of thought kind of got me away from thinking I just wanted to join a band or be in a band. I wanted to have my own band and do my thing, you know? So I started auditioning, you know, bass players and drummers and just kind of doing my own thing and started my own band and did the tunes that I liked. And I've been doing the same thing ever since, you know, and in order to be successful, you have to be putting out albums. So, that kind of comes with the territory. And I've been pretty lucky to, connect with some of the people that I've connected with in my career that have helped me along the way.
Man, that's an awesome story. So you really didn't even think about anything else but doing this from day one. So it was in a sense kind of easier.
Yeah, I got my first first guitar at age 11, and I just knew that's what I wanted to do. I just knew that's, you know, I was really hoping that I could do that and that would be my career.
That's from great, a young age. Yeah. Well, it has. So congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, I want to talk about your last album, Trouble and Whiskey. It was great. It was some of your most ferocious playing in there. I mean, was that deliberate or did you notice that yourself? That, I mean, you tore it up on that whole album.
Well, thank you, but I got to give credit to Ben Elliott over at American Showplace Music, and he not only engineered the album, but he produced it. And man, Ben is a guitar guy, and he's got probably the best ear in the business, the best ear of anybody I've ever worked with. And, you know, it's funny because right shortly before I stopped playing with Hubert, I was lucky enough to be on his last album that was called About Them Shoes. It was a tribute to Muddy Waters. And, you know, Eric Clapton was on the record. Keith Richards was on the record. I played a couple songs on the record. I mean, Levon Helm was on it. It was just
wow.
Full of superstars and, you know, guys I grew up idolizing. But it was actually recorded at American Showplace Music with Ben back in, I think, 2001 we did it. Or 2002, maybe. So it's funny, now I'm on his label and it's kind of like come full circle. Now
yeah,
I'm there.
That's really cool.
But man, he brought a lot of that out of me. He would say, you know, I would do a solo or we would do a song and he would say, man, you guys can do better. I think you should go back in there and try it another time. And I'd be like, okay, cool. I just nailed it. He'd be like, nah, take it another time. So he really kind of has a way of pulling the best out of you. And I got to give a lot of credit to him for that.
Yeah, well, both of you guys did a great job. I mean, let's talk about some of the songs. Opening song is called I Need Your Lovin', and your guitar is pretty fuzzed up. And you're doing like a ton of pinch harmonics on there. And I think, is there like multiple guitar tracks going on there?
I Need Your Lovin'? I don't think so. No, that's pretty much one guitar track, if I remember correctly.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
I did use a Gibson Les Paul for that song, and I kind of wanted a little bit of kind of like a Billy Gibbons kind of tone. I want a little bit of fuzz, like you just mentioned on that.
Hmm.
And that's what I told Ben, and that's what he dialed in for me. So,
so was that like a what do you call it? Bah. It wasn't a pedal or anything. What was that fuzz coming from? It was a.
That's a Gibson Les Paul. and it's coming through two Lewis Electric amps. Lewis Electric amplifiers are kind of boutique, hand-wired amps. This guy does that builds, you know, each one's custom.
Yeah.
And Ben's friends with them. So he had like four or five or maybe even a half a dozen different amps in there for me to use.
Wow.
So when I would tell him what kind of sound I'm looking for, he would have his tech plug me into like a couple different amps and try to find the sound we were looking for. And then he would dial it in. And really, that's just a Gibson cranked up through a couple, you know, great amplifiers.
Sounds great. Totally
Thank
cool.
Thank you.
Trouble and Whiskey, the title song, your solo in there was freaking blistering. It was
thank you.
You know, I thought of Gary Moore when I heard of that. That was like, you're on fire, dude.
And
I
well, was, thank you.
Yeah, man. What was the backstory to that song?
Trouble and Whiskey is a song that, you know, that song I was actually writing, and the title was going to be I Confess. There's a breakdown in that song where we break it down, and it says like has I Confess in there. And, but I co-wrote that song with Jimmy Bennett, and he came up with the title, you know, he came up with the line, Trouble used to be my lover and the bottle was my only friend.
Yeah.
And so the song kind of morphed from I Confess to Trouble and Whiskey. You know, and, that's kind of the backstory behind that.
Very cool, man. I love that song. Another cool one was Traveling North, and you know, that's an instrumental, but the title I thought was perfect because, like, to me, you know, when I heard that song, all I thought of was driving in the car and, like, you know, the soundtrack to that. And I was funny. Like, how did that come about?
Traveling North is, it was meant to be an instrumental because I wanted to have one instrumental on the album. And that was one of the songs that I was trying to finish up when we were in the studio. And I kind of wanted a little bit more direction with it. I kind of felt like it needed a little push, like something might be missing from it. So John Ginty, who actually plays keyboards for the Dixie Chicks, but he also has his own band when he's not with the Dixie Chicks called the John Ginty Band. And he also is on the American Showplace Music label and lives in Jersey, close to where the studio's at. So he happened to stop by the studio and offered to help me finish writing the song and then offered to play on it. And he's one of the best Hammond B3 players out there, man. The guy's just amazing. So we sat down for about a half hour, did a few different changes on that song, and he played Hammond organ on it. And after we recorded the song, I listened to it and kind of like you said, and just got a vibe for it and came up with the title Traveling North.
Yeah, very cool. Very appropriate, man.
Thank you.
I was noticing, and if you don't want to answer this, that's totally cool, that some of the songs on the album are about like struggles with booze. And I was curious, is that related to like personal experience? Like, did you get sober recently or I don't
know? No, not really. You know, it's just, like I said, Trouble and Whiskey was originally going to be called I Confess, but the line that Jimmy Bennett came up with was so cool. So I changed that to Trouble and Whiskey. And then the other song, I think you're referring to Bottle Keeps Staring at Me.
Yeah,
was a song
right.
that I had written before Trouble and Whiskey. So it just happens to be that
Two
songs with the whiskey reference in there. But, you know, being in bars and playing music my whole life, I've definitely had my share of that and been around that.
Sure, sure.
But there's not it wasn't really meant to be like that. It just happened to be that I had a couple tracks with, you know.
Gotcha. Bullfrog Blues is on there, and I thought that was really ballsy. That's a Rory Gallagher song, man. It takes a lot of balls to cover Rory Gallagher, man. I think so anyway.
Well, thank you. Yeah, he's one of my favorites for sure.
And you did a great job playing Sly there in the opening. And I was curious what motivated you to include that song in there.
I have to give my wife Karen a little bit of credit for that because you know, I had about four or five Rory songs that I wanted to do, and I knew I wanted to redo a Rory song. And she kind of pushed me. She said, man, Bullfrog out of these four or five that you picked is definitely the one. And she kind of pushed me in the direction to do that. And not only that, we had been performing that at our live shows for 6 or 7 months before we did the album. And the crowd always loves that song. We get a great response to that song. So when we went in the studio to record it, it was kind of a no-brainer. It was one that I felt like we should do, you know.
Awesome. Well, everybody, I would encourage you to go check out Trouble and Whiskey. It's Sean's latest album. He's coming out with another one this summer, but that's a good as introduction to Sean as possible. You can check out 10 to Midnight, which is also awesome. I talked about a little bit your album. Is that what you're working on or getting ready to work on now that you're most excited about?
Yeah, the next album we're going to do actually next month in July. We're going to hit the road to start touring. We're going to be out for about 7 weeks. We leave the beginning of July. And then we've got about 5 or 6 days off towards the end of July. And that's when we're going to go to New Jersey to record the most, you know, majority of the part of the next album. So I'm actually still writing for that right now and, you know, still laying down ideas and stuff. So
very cool, man. Well, I'll look forward to that one coming out.
Thank you.
Where'd you grew up in South? Did you grow up down there?
I was born in Melbourne, Florida, over on the East Coast.
Okay.
And when I was about 7 or 8 years old, my family relocated to Tampa.
Oh, okay. So you grew up here.
Yeah, I grew up in, I kind of consider Tampa my hometown. That's where I grew up, went to school and, you know, spent a lot of my life. And then after that, I moved to Dade City over in Hernando County for about 11 years, which is north of Tampa, about 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's quiet there, man. It's really quiet. That's like old Florida almost.
Oh, it's beautiful there. Yeah. I rented a house. It was a 3-bedroom house with a couple acres right on the Withlacoochee River, and it was great. And I toured and stuff, and it was a great – it's great, you know, when you're when I moved in there back – and I think it was 2000 when I moved in that house, and I was – touring with Hubert a lot. So we would go, you know, to England and we'd be in New York City or overseas or whatever. And there was a lot of chaos going on and it was just a really nice, quiet place to come back to, you know, after all the craziness is, you know, is done, you come home to that in the, you know, on the, in the country, on the river. And it was just a really nice place to be based. It was beautiful out there.
Yeah. I can understand that. I've been to Dade City a few times. It's like a different, it's just like old Florida, man.
It is
real laid back, real mellow. It's like stepping back in time, kind of.
It really is, man. It's a cool spot.
What was growing up like? What kind of childhood did you have?
Well, my mom was a school teacher growing up. My dad, when we lived over on the East Coast when I was a young kid, he actually worked for the Kennedy Space Center.
Oh, cool.
You know, and he was an engineer there for a while. And then when we moved to Tampa, it was pretty normal life. We had a dog, you know, I have grown up and I have a younger brother and, you know, we went to school and pretty much had a normal upbringing. When we moved to Tampa, my dad became a consultant. He was a business consultant pretty much his whole life. And, my mom stayed a school teacher until she retired. And, it was a pretty normal childhood really, you know, for the most part.
Very cool, man. How did you get into blues then? Usually like normal childhood and blues is not like the pattern, you know, usually there's like something fucked up that you're trying to figure out or, you know what I'm saying? How did you get into blues?
Man, I got to go back to the Jimi Hendrix thing, you know, because, you know, like I said, I knew I wanted to play guitar, but when I heard Hendrix play Red House, that really gave me goosebumps. And I knew that's the kind of music I wanted to play. I didn't know anything about blues when I heard that song, when I heard Hendrix play Red House, I just knew that's the direction I wanted to go in. And that's what I wanted to do at a really young age, you know?
That's very cool, man. What are some of the, like, you've been doing this a long time. What are some of the bigger obstacles that you've had to deal with throughout this journey, either, you know, musically, business, personal, anything that's, you know, you've had to overcome?
Man, the business itself is always changing, you know, as technology changes, you know, record sales have changed, people buy their music in a different way. They stream it for free, you know? So, you know, you have to play a lot live in order to sell, to keep your name out there and to sell albums. But it's, you know, it's always been a struggle to kind of, you know, get a good agent who can keep me working full time. You know, right now, currently I have a good agent over in Europe that I just landed a deal with about 5 months ago. But I mean, you know, actually right now I'm kind of handling my own bookings here in the States. And it's just really hard to find a really good team. I am really lucky to have a great label, American Showplace with Ben Elliott, a great radio promotions guy, Rick Lusher. So I've got a great team, but it's always been kind of a struggle to get, you know, an agent on board to book you as much as you need to be booked and just keep the wheels turning. It's just a constant work in progress, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. That's pretty
common. if you don't enjoy playing the music, it's just, there's no way you have to really love it, you know?
Totally. And at least your wife handles all your merch. And I noticed like, she's like, you know, she's very on top of that, you know, obviously.
Man, she does a great job. She's also, you know, inspires me and kind of encourages me to do things when I'm down in the dumps a little bit.
Yeah.
She's become a real asset to what I do, and not only in my personal life, but to my business as well. So
good for you, man. That's awesome. Happy for you.
Thank you.
What, you know, as far as like, if you had to give advice to yourself when you were younger, you know, what advice would you have given young Sean Chambers from 15 years ago, let's say?
Not to be maybe so nervous and not to take things so seriously. And kind of like Hubert taught me, just go up there and have some fun. You know, Hubert used to tell me, man, he goes, we're going to play these blues as long as we can. You know why? And I say, why? And he goes, because one day we're not going to be able to do it anymore. And he's like, you know, and he said, you know, we have a gift and we got to keep doing what we're doing, you know, and keep it alive. And we made that promise, you know, and I just think that, you know, I would have told myself back when I was a kid to lighten up and enjoy the ride a little bit more.
You yeah. know what I mean? So you were like a lot more, intense or, nervous maybe, or
yeah, you
less
know,
forgiving.
I still get nervous, and sometimes, you know, I can go on stage and not be nervous at all. It just depends on your mood. A lot of times, someplace you could, you know, you could be playing a room for 50 people and be a nervous wreck, you know, for some, and it's just, I always have dealt with nerves a little bit.
Sure.
But so yeah, just as a kid growing up, you know, just, you know, it's just always nice to, you know, you look back and you think, you know, it's some pretty good times. When you look back, a lot of the good memories at the time may have been seemed more like a struggle, you know, but,
yeah,
you know, you look back and think, man, it's been a pretty good ride, you know? So as I get older, I realize to learn to kind of enjoy the ride as I'm doing it.
That's awesome, man. Well, when you're playing, you never know any of, cause again, I've seen you enough times. You're very, very, you seem 100% comfortable, and no one would ever know you're nervous, whatever. That's what I'm sure you've heard that like from your wife a million times, but
well, yeah. She encourages me and everything, but I mean, you know, I appreciate you saying that. A lot of the nerves and stuff come before you get on stage, but once you hit the first note and you start getting into it, the nerves kind of go away, and it shifts into like the energy of what you're doing. Those nerves become kind of like, you know, all of a sudden it turns into fuel, you know?
It's funny. I remember like one of the first or second time I saw you, it was outdoors. It was freaking pouring, raining. And I'm sitting there. And it's like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. I'm like, shit, man, that poor guy. It was like, you know, and I'm sure you've done that a million times already. But
yeah, it seems like a lot of times when we do outdoor show, we get crappy weather.
A couple of weeks ago, and we had great weather at Skipper's. That was like the best weather. That night was so awesome. It was really like perfect.
Yeah,
that was great.
It was. You know, Skipper's is one of those venues. It's outdoor venue, so a lot of it is, you know, kind of dependent on good weather to have a good night. You know.
Oh, totally, man. Do you always play a Strat? Because I saw you. There's three guitars you played just recently. You had the white Strat. You had like a gold top, and then you had a black Strat. It looked like a Strat, like kind of relicked.
I don't have a relic Strat. I have a blue, it's almost purple Strat.
Okay, maybe that was it.
And it was the first Strat I ever got. It was back in like 91 I got that guitar, and I still have it.
Wow, and that was when you were playing on stage, because you took that out. That was like your second or third, you know, it was deep into your set when you pulled it out. That was the guitar?
Yeah, I'm actually, lately I've been using that for slides, so I only use it for a couple things. But that guitar, man, I mean, you know, that guitar, I've been all over the world with that guitar, and Hubert, you know, I played with Hubert with that guitar. A lot of guys like Magic Slim and Hubert and a lot of guys, Pine Top Perkins, have held that guitar and played it. So it has like a mojo to it.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's one of those instruments I put in my hands and it makes me feel good. You know what I mean? I've had that guitar for, I think, more than half my life. But yeah, I play primarily Strats. The white Strat that I play was given to me by a really good friend who passed away actually several years ago.
Oh, sorry, man.
And it's just it's actually a Mexican Strat or Japanese Strat. I'm sorry. The white one is. And, I put some Lindy Fralin pickups in it, and it just made the whole guitar come to life, man, those pickups. And, so I primarily use those two Strats, and I have a Les Paul that I also use for a couple slide songs as well. But, you know, for most of my show, I'm playing a Strat.
Yeah. And you've always been a Strat guy since?
Pretty much. Yeah. I've owned Gibsons. Like I said, I own a Les Paul now, but I've always just kind of gravitated towards the Fender Stratocaster for whatever reason.
Anybody influence your playing that people might be surprised to hear?
I don't know about surprise to hear. I mean, I've just been influenced by, I'm influenced by a lot of the traditional blues guys too, but, you know, grown up and as, you know, a middle income, you know, white kid, you know, when I play, it kind of comes out how it comes out, but I'm really influenced by everybody from Robert Johnson to, Buka White, you know, to, of course, all the Three Kings, you know, Albert, Freddie, and BB. And then, of course, a lot of, you know, always gravitated towards a lot of the Texas guys, you know, Albert Collins, you know, Johnny Winter, you know, a lot of those guys. So I don't know if there would be any one guy that I was influenced by that people would necessarily be surprised by. But I do have a lot of, you know, a lot of influences. So.
Gotcha. Do you remember the first CD or record you got ever?
Actually, the first album I got as a kid before I even got a guitar was from a buddy of mine who gave it to me, and it was a Kiss album. And it was Kiss Alive, too. It was a double album.
That's right. I remember that album. I had that.
Yeah, I was 9 or 10, and then I actually got to see them in concert when I was about 10 or 11 years old. It was the first concert I saw. So,
where'd you see him? Down here?
I saw him at the Lakeland Civic Center.
Very cool.
And I had to beg my mom for about, because I had a friend of mine when I was real young. We used to, once I discovered Kiss, we used to dress up like Kiss for Halloween and stuff. I mean, we're going along, you know, when I'm super young. Yeah, but we both begged our moms for about 2 weeks to go to that concert because they were like, there's no way you're going to see Kiss.
And they took you?
And finally, they did, yeah. My dad was a consultant, so he was out of town for a couple weeks. So my friend Harley was his name. His mom and my mom decided they would drop us off at the Lakeland Civic Center, go grab a bite to eat, and then come back and pick us up. And so that's
cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, talk about Desert Island Discs. If you had to pick your top three CDs in no particular order, knowing this could change tomorrow, just like knee jerk reaction, what would be the top three for right now?
My top three CDs ever?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Just for today. You could change tomorrow.
I would have to say, well, of course, Jimi Hendrix, the greatest hits album, or maybe Axis Bold as Love, Texas Flood by Stevie Ray Vaughan, because I kind of, when I was into Hendrix, I listened to nothing but Hendrix for like 2 or 3 years. I was just a nut about Hendrix. And then, you know, Hendrix, I heard him play Voodoo Child a million times. And then I heard a buddy of mine played me Stevie Ray Vaughan's version of Voodoo Child. And I said, holy,
yeah,
you know, who's this guy?
Yeah.
So then I discovered Stevie, and I listened to that album over and over for like 6 months straight. So I'd have to say Texas Flood by Stevie. And then after that, maybe Keep Truckin' by Albert Collins or something like that, because Albert was really one of my favorite players too.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to pick three, but that's a good question. It makes you think.
It is. Yeah, it is. Hey, Sean, what's something you've learned about yourself along this whole journey?
I think one thing I've learned about myself is there's things that I can do and accomplish that I never really believed I could.
That's great.
And if you just set your mind to something and, you know, set goals and figure out a way to accomplish your goals, you can do it, even though sometimes you sit back and think, you know, what? There's no way I could get everything done I need to get done to accomplish this goal, but you just knock it out a piece at a time and you can get things, you know, accomplish your goals. So
very cool, man.
Yeah.
Hey man, when we're about to come out with your 7th album, I'd say that's awesome, man, for sure.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Craig.
Hey, best childhood memory, going to that Kiss concert.
Yeah. I'd say one of my best childhood memories is getting my first guitar and just, you know, starting to play guitar. That was a great memory.
Was that purple Strat?
No. That my first guitar was back when I was about 11, and it was an acoustic guitar I got for Christmas from my parents.
You still have it?
No, I don't have that guitar. No. It's a funny story because at a young age, I wanted to play music, but I was always tapping on the counter and beating on stuff. I still kind of do that. I wanted to play drums. So my mom and dad had a discussion, and my mom said that, you know, I talked to your dad, and we decided that, you can pick any instrument that you want to play, and we'll buy you 4 lessons and we'll buy you the instrument, but you have to practice for the whole 4 lessons, you know, and at least follow through for 4 lessons. And then if you don't want to play, you can, but if we're going to pay for the lessons, you need to be practicing, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, okay, cool. I want to play drums. And my mom said, well, I don't know if me and your dad thought about drums. Let me talk to your dad. And then my dad said, no, anything but drums, because he didn't want to hear that. All day long. So my second choice was guitar, and I'm glad that that's what I chose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
are either your parents musical? Like, did they listen to music a lot, or?
Not really. You know, oddly enough, no. That was just something that I enjoyed as a kid. My dad didn't play any instruments. He didn't really listen to a lot of music, just radio stuff. And my mom was kind of the same. It's just something that I picked up on at a young age. I started really digging a lot of music, you know, and stuff like that.
Did your brother play an instrument?
No. Uh-uh.
Wow. That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
Tell me something about yourself that people will either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
I'm pretty shy, you know, I'm a pretty shy guy. You know, if you come see the band, you may not know that, but as a kid growing up, I was super like awkwardly shy.
Wow.
And, you know, and playing music kind of really helped me to break through some of that shyness and kind of helped me kind of find myself and discover myself. But, I don't know. That's a good question, but I would have to say just, I've always been kind of reserved and shy and, you know, kind of guy.
It's interesting. That's amazing. I'm surprised to hear that. I mean, I just kind of met you as just through this show, but you've been, you know, I met you in person at Skipper's, but I would yeah. never have thought that.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, a lot of people may not, but you know, people that know me really good, like my wife or my family, they know that about me. So,
yeah, you've done a great job, man. That's hard to, you know, if you're painfully shy and you go be a performer, that's like the exact opposite, you know,
exactly.
So I give you credit, man.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, it is. I think that's a lot of reasons where my nervousness sometimes comes in, you know, sometimes is just it's my personality, you know.
Totally get it, man. Hey, what's the happiest moment or time in your life?
The happiest moment or time in my life? Probably when I got married to my wife, Karen.
There you go, man. You get some brownie points on that, man.
Yeah. Yep.
How long y'all been married?
We've been married about 5 years, going on 5 years.
Awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have a question. Your most important person in your life, I'm assuming that's Karen?
Yes, I'd have to say so, man. She's my rock for sure.
Very cool. Most important thing your dad taught you?
The most important thing my dad taught me is, you know, be a man of your word. You know, if you say you're going to do something, do it. If you start something, follow up with it. And you know, my dad would always tell me, you know, it's easy to quit. Anybody can quit doing something, but it takes, you know, a man, and it takes, you know, some nerve and some balls, you know, to finish up something sometimes. So if you start something, finish it. If you tell somebody you're going to do something, do it, and just treat people how you want to be treated, you know?
Good stuff, man. Most important thing your mom taught you.
My mom taught me that, you know, you can do anything you want to do, and just reach for the stars and be kind to people and be, you know, and enjoy life and have fun and just be an honest, nice, caring, you know, loving, giving person. That's kind of what my mom taught me and instilled in me from a young age.
That's awesome. Your folks still around?
My dad passed away about three and a half years ago. Actually, it was June, actually, in 2014, so it's been 4 years. My mom's still alive. She lives in Clearwater, Florida.
Oh, cool. So you get to see her a decent amount?
Yeah, we see each other, not as much as I would like to, but we do see each other several times a year, and we talk on the phone several times a week, so I feel like she's close by, you know?
That's awesome. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
What's your non-musical superpower? Do you have any?
Non-musical superpower?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
All good.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I'm not sure.
Biggest business or personal win?
Biggest business or personal win, it would kind of have to go into the same. They're all relative because, you know, just being somewhat successful at music, you know, and following my dream, you know, I think that I still have a long way to go and a lot of hurdles to cross, but I feel like, you know, in business, which is my music, and my personal thing I've always wanted to do, which is music, have kind of started to come to fruition, you know?
Yeah, they definitely have, man. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music, Sean?
I love fishing. I love boating. Karen and I love to go camping. you know, we like to be outside doing stuff outside. So I've always needed a kind of a balance in my life. I know guys that do nothing but music and that's all they concentrate and think about 24/7. And I just have the kind of personality where I kind of got to break things up a little bit.
Man, it's a lot healthier, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's nice to have a life outside of music as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so Karen and I like to do some different things, you know, outside, some activities and stuff like that.
Bass fishing?
I love bass fishing. Yeah, yeah. I haven't been in a few years, but I love bass fishing. You know,
yeah, it's awesome.
Love being on the lake or saltwater fishing, either or.
Very relaxing, isn't it?
It is, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, three more questions, and I appreciate all your time.
My pleasure.
Toughest decision you ever had to make or hardest thing you ever had to do?
Man, I think, you know, the toughest thing you ever have to do for me personally, everything seems to relate back to my band and my music. But it's something I take very personal too. And my band members are like family to me, you know? Mm. So I think probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do is fire a friend from my band or make a change in my band when it's, you know, feels like it's your brother, you know? Yeah. And for whatever reason, you know, people's lives change, directions change and things change. So I would just have to say, you know, something like that probably.
Well, you know, that expression, they say people come into your life for a reason, a season or a lifetime.
Right.
You know, that's just the way, is, man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, you know, just having to make changes like that in your personal life and stuff and with your business and people that you care about, you know?
Totally, man. What's the most important lesson your business has taught you, Sean?
I don't know. You know, you need to be good to people and treat people with respect, and they treat you with respect and they're good to you back, I think, you know?
Sure. And man, the last question is, what's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And has that change been intentional and deliberate or just a natural part of aging?
Like I said earlier, I've learned to appreciate the ride a little bit more, as I get older, but you know, also meeting my wife, Karen, you know, I had somewhat of a different lifestyle before I met Karen. And I think she's really helped me to kind of really start prioritizing what I want to do and helping me to accomplish those goals. I often tell her, you know, if I hadn't have met her, I don't really know what I'd be, where I'd be. I don't know. So, that's how I'd have to answer that one.
Good, man. I'm really happy for you guys, man.
And thank you.
You know, when I see you guys together, you can see that it's like a very easygoing, you know, it seems to be a good fit, you know, so that's nice, man.
Man, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, Craig. I got lucky, I'm telling you.
I know how you feel. I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's not always, you know, it's not always easy to find a good woman, but especially, you know, in the music business. I didn't get married until I was 43.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's just hard to, you know, being in the music business isn't exactly healthy for relationships sometimes, yeah. You know, and so especially when you're on the road touring. But, you know, now that my wife tours with me and we do everything together, it's become a great thing. You know, it's a great, strong unit we have going. So
that's awesome, man.
I think that's made me a much better person and a stronger person over the past 6.5 years, you know.
That's great, man. Happy for y'all. Hey, I want to tell people how to find you. First of all, it's Sean Chambers, S-E-A-N, Sean Chambers. Please check him out online at seanchambers.com. For everybody in Europe, Sean is going to be touring all over Europe this summer. Want to talk about that? Where are you going to be?
Yeah, we were planning on coming over to Europe in 2019 in the summertime for some festivals. But it turns out we got a few offers and we're going to be going over there this December. We're going to be playing some club dates and doing some like civic center type things, you know, no festivals, cause I don't think they have many festivals in December over there, but, we'll be going over there in December for about 10 or 12 shows and then back over in May and possibly June and July for some shows as well in 2019.
Awesome. And can people find that on your website?
Yes. All the dates, tour dates, et cetera, are all on seanchambers.com.
Awesome. Everybody, please check that out. Sean's going to start working on his next album in July at American Showplace Music up in, he said, Dover, New Jersey.
Dover, New Jersey. Right.
Yeah. And you seem like you have a really good relationship with those guys. And was it Bob Elliott, you said?
Ben Elliott.
Ben Elliott. Yeah. It seems like you have a real good relationship with those guys over there and they're working well with you.
We work well together and we're good friends, man. We're family. So it's a wonderful thing.
Awesome. And then throughout July and August, Sean's going to be all over the U.S. and Canada. And that too is on your website?
It is. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And you can check Sean out on social media as well, on Facebook and Instagram, both of them at Sean Chambers Music. Please go out and support Sean. He's a great performer, super cool guy, really good blues player. And he leaves it all out on the stage there. And, support him on tour. Go say hello and tell him you heard him on this show and how cool he sounded. And then you get to hear him play his music. Any final words of wisdom, man?
Man, I would just like to tell everybody, man, keep trucking, keep following your dreams, be true to yourself, and be good to each other, man. You know, that's all we have is each other. So
you got that right, man. Well, thank you so much, Sean. I appreciate it. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. You got it, brother. Hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Go check out Sean on tour at seanchambers.com. Thanks again to Sean Chambers for spending time with us. I appreciate it. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Get on our newsletter list and sign up for the cool stuff we have. And remember, happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.